All right. I believe I can introduce Rabbi Tversky to us. I don't know if there needs to be much introduction, but for the sake of everybody and for the formality of the conversation that we're going to have today with Rabbi Tversky, I'd like to introduce everybody to Rabbi Dr. Abraham Tversky. He's a descendant of the founders of the Hasidic movement, whose philosophy he embraces and applies in his psychiatric practice. An ordained rabbi, Dr. Tversky is assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine and founder and medical director of Gateway Rehabilitation Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Dr. Tversky's scores of earlier works have established his position as a Torah scholar who possesses psychological and insight that enhance application of Torah principle to everyday life. Rabbi Tversky has the Haskama to the website of Guard Your Eyes. I met with the Rabbi Tversky. I had the privilege to meet Rabbi Tversky with my husband and the people who put together the website of Guard Your Eyes this past month of Tishrei, right after I believe it was right after Yom Kippur, and he obliged so kindly to head this call in order to get a lot of the questions that, unfortunately, a woman who just discovered that her husband is addicted to the schmutz, I'm sure there's many questions and confusions that's going on in the mind of a spouse. And hoping that tonight we will be able to clarify some of the confusion and bring you guys to a road of recovery. And I'm saying road of recovery because I'm also a recovering co-sex addict, which means my husband is a sex addict. It was denounced to me about 20 years ago, and ever since then he's been in recovery. He is manning the call for the men for the past 4 years through Guard Your Eyes, and I am trying to man the call for the women. However, I've noticed that ever since we did start the conference call, the attendance has been dwindling, and the help that I've noticed in giving more is really the directions to go to a meeting, to get a sponsor, and if that doesn't work, I'm looking to see them seek help, and if it's not the help that they're trying to find with a therapist, they can find it with me as a coach. But again, most importantly is I found this conversation that we're going to have today with Rabbi Tversky to give you a lot of clarity and direction. And hopefully we will continue with the conference call that we have started 2 years ago. Many of you guys have been on this call and now attending meetings, and I've seen you staying on recovery path, which I'm very proud of. So, Rabbi Tversky, thank you so much for attending.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it, and I'll start with first to see if you have anything to say, and then I will present to you some of the questions that the ladies have sent me through email today, and if there's any other questions that's from the ladies that are sending us a call, I will give them a chance to ask.
Well, let's begin with the questions.
With a question. Okay, the question is okay, I found that my husband is addicted to the schmutz. Why do I need to attend 12-step program?
In any addiction, whether it's alcohol, drugs, gambling, or sex, there is no way that any person lives in a vacuum. And I want to point out one thing, I think, before I go any further. Under no circumstances should a wife ever consider herself as being the cause of the husband's sexual addiction, regardless of what the husband may say. And he may say, if you did this, if you did that, whatever, just don't accept it. It's his problem and his problem alone. and the wife did not cause it. On the other hand, there are things that a wife may do and refer to this as codependency, which make it easier for the addict to continue the addiction. And it's only natural that when two people live together and one becomes dependent, whether on alcohol, drugs, or sex, that the other behaves intuitively according to how she thinks she should, right, without realizing that that may not be the optimum behavior. Let me give you an example from the alcoholic field, then we'll go
Rabbi?
Back to... Yes.
Hey, I'm sorry, I need to stop you. There's a sweet lady that is on the phone with her baby. I'd like everybody who is not speaking, mute themselves by *6 on your phone. Everybody, mute *6 and let Rabbi Tversky speak without any interruption. Everybody, *6. Go ahead, Rabbi Tversky. I'm sorry, I had to interrupt.
Okay, right. Take a look at the example of an alcoholic. That the alcoholic does things that are irrational, comes home late, spends money foolishly, gets into trouble. And what happens is the wife and other family members may, with good intention, try to help him. If it's arrested for an alcoholic offense, they may try to bail him out. The gambler goes into debt, they might try to bail him out. They don't realize that this kind of thing is enabling the addiction to continue. And I think that in sexual addiction, it may also be the codependency, that the woman has to know what her role is, not in curing him, but in her role for herself. A sex addict, having a sex addict for a husband is extremely painful. It's a blow to the woman's self-esteem. She may feel somehow, I'm not good enough. If I had been better, then this would not have happened. And I think that the woman needs help and guidance in building her self-esteem so that she can relate properly to the husband in recovery.
Thank you. Okay, here it is, another one. After the confession, the full confession, and it's been already 3 months, is it okay still that I have slips of anger towards my husband? And how long is this anger going to last?
I think this is going to lead to another question also, which we might take them together. A common question that I find is, will I ever be able to trust my husband again?
Yes.
Now, I think I would like to answer both questions with the same answer. It's true of every addiction, but I'll use again alcohol as an example. An alcoholic who stops drinking and never has another drop, but does not do anything to change his personality, is what we refer to as a dry drunk.
Mm.
Right? In other words, it's true he's not drinking, but his personality has not changed, and he may be even more difficult to live with than when he was drinking.
Mm.
Now, I was at a meeting where an alcoholic was celebrating his 25th year of anniversary of sobriety, and he began his talk with saying, the man I once was drank, and the man I once was will drink again.
Mm.
Which means his sobriety has been sustained because he has become a different person. And that's true of the sex addict. If the sex addict stops his acting out, whether it's with masturbation or pornography or whatever else it is, right? If he stops acting out and does not do anything to change his personality and become a different and better person, right, then there's no trust, and then the anger will continue.
Mm.
If he successfully undergoes a personality change and becomes less of an anger person, right, much more considerate, gets rid of his selfishness, right, gets rid of his character defects, of which we find many that are listed in the program. If he gets rid of his character defects, he becomes a different person. And if he becomes a different person, just like Hashem says, that if a person sinned and does proper tshuva, he will not punish him for his sins because this is not the same person that sinned. It's a different person. So if the addict goes, and the best way to get this change of personality is by working the 12 steps. Back in 1961, I went to my first 12-step meeting, and although I was never addicted, except to writing, although I was never addicted to alcohol or drugs, I realized that the value of the program was that it helped a person to undergo a character improvement and that I could use this as well as any addict. So I've been going to meetings now for over 50 years.
Right? Wow.
And I think that the program, if the person works it sincerely, goes to the meetings, does the reading, does the prayer, and has a sponsor, right, and works the program as it should, then he will become a different person. His personality will change. He'll become more considerate. His selfishness will go away. He'll drop his anger. He'll stop blaming everybody for his problems. But that cannot happen in a day or a week or in a month or in a year. It's a slow process. But I think that the wife is in an excellent position to detect it, and she will see the change. If she sees the change in the person, the anger will abate, and she'll be able to trust him again. So
yes.
That's going to take time.
So would this 12 step will help a woman who is co-sex addict?
Repeat that again, please.
Does the co-sex addict need to go through her 12 steps too?
Does the spouse?
Yes.
Yes, I think it's extremely important that the spouse goes to a codependency program, whether it's Sex Anonymous, S-Anon. Some places there are no S-Anon meetings. They go to Codependence Anonymous. I have had many wives of gamblers and sex addicts who did not have access to their specific meetings go to Al-Anon, which is the Alcoholics Anonymous family group. It's all the same program. It's the 12 steps, and the 12 steps are the most wonderful gift that mankind has received.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Just a second, sweetheart. Just a second. I need you first to I have people who send messages. I need to take care of those questions first, and then I'll take you. What is your name?
Michal.
Okay, Michal. One more question I have to Rabbi Tversky, and I'll take you, okay? Is there anybody else after Michal that want to ask a question? Okay. The next question is, Rabbi Tversky, is my husband is not going to meetings. He's not working on himself. Why is it that I need to go work on it? Would anything will change?
If your husband is not going to meetings, then you're going to need a great deal of support and guidance on how to survive in that situation. Because, as I say, if he's not going to meetings, I doubt that he will undergo the character change which is necessary for a real recovery. And then you're going to be living with a dry drunk, even if he cut out the sexual acting out. And that's not going to be a pleasant situation. Right? Because a cutting out the addiction without improving one's character makes the person very difficult to live with. And you're going to have to get guidance as how to adjust what's your role in there. What are your options?
Right. Hey, should a woman right away get a divorce after she found her husband having these affairs going on for years? Or would it be better for her to stay with the program for the first 6 months and then decide?
It all depends. You know, it all depends on the sensitivity of a woman. Some women who husbands have cheated on them are their attitude is that it's an unforgivable sin. It's never going to change, and I'm going to leave. It certainly would be advisable before making any final move to talk it over several sessions with a therapist. If the woman has any hope that the husband can change, then what you ought to do is start off with the group, with Essanon, and then feel her way through the meetings as to whether she should stay or leave. But she has to think out her options, because there's too many variables there. There's a problem with support. How's she going to support herself? There's a problem with the children. There's many things that have to. So it can't be done abruptly. It's going to need some thinking out and some consideration. And while this is going on, I think she will certainly profit by going to the codependent meetings.
She's asking that she's in her 20s. She just had full disclosure from her husband yesterday about the fact that he was doing illegal things. He was acting out with children. They do not have kids yet.
Yeah, when did it happen that he was tampering with children?
3 years ago. Her husband was way beyond the age of 18 when he did these actions.
Right.
Rabbi, do you want to take it later? Do you want to address it?
Let me just respond to it now. This is a more complex situation because...
Yes.
In addition to addiction, you've got a problem, a possibility of molestation and the pedophilia. And he certainly would have to go to a specialist who treats pedophilics because the fact that he hasn't possibly done it for 3 years, well, we're not even sure that that's so. So it's not going to be enough that he goes to SA. He's going to have to get to a specialist who treats pedophilia. Yeah, for the only person who can make that decision is you. I can't answer that question for you or for anyone else as to whether to leave the husband.
Mm-hmm.
That's a personal decision. We can talk about it, but the ultimate decision has to be yours.
I have another one. Perla, just email me. How can you help your husband wash clean his mind? One of the questions I got on the email today.
That's part of the attitude of what can I do to stop him from being a sexual addict, from acting out sexually, or for having pornography or whatever. And, you know, one of the steps in all of the codependent groups is I have to realize that I am powerless. Right, we are powerless over the addict. We cannot make the addict change. It's super alcoholism, drugs, sex, gambling. We cannot do that. Now, cleaning up his mind is something which, first of all, it's something that everybody should do. There isn't a human being who doesn't have some kinds of thoughts, whether they're lustful or otherwise, because that's part of our animal being.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our challenge that we have to overcome. And every day we pray to clean out our thoughts. It's part of the daily prayer, at least in mine, that we pray that God should help us clean up our thoughts. And if we are sincere at it, that's one of the steps in the program, that asking God to remove our character defects.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just because we ask him to do it doesn't mean he's going to immediately respond and do it. We know that the great Chofetz Chaim used to come into the shul every night at midnight, open up the Aron Kodesh, and he used to pray tearfully that God should remove his anger. Right?
Mm.
He never lost his temper, but he had anger when he was provoked, and he wanted to get rid of that, but he could not do it himself. So he prayed for Hashem to do it. And since he prayed so often, it's obvious that God did not respond to his prayer the first time. So there's nothing that a wife can do to clean up the husband's mind. That's his challenge that he has to do.
Another question is, should I spy after my husband and see if he's looking at schmutz on the phone, on his computer?
I don't think that. Spying is almost part of controlling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it's, first of all, it's provocative. You cannot spy secretly and that's going to be irritating. I think that if your husband is going to be acting out as a wife who has come to know him, you'll know. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll know without spying on him.
Now, that's right.
You might not know the first day it happens. But
excuse me.
If he slips, you'll realize that he has slipped.
Yeah, we like it says in the codependent workbook, we need to trust our gut.
Right.
Would you be able to ask Rabbi Chorsky here to describe detachment and how to begin to work on it? I'm having trouble doing so without feeling snobby. Then,
Mary, repeat that, please.
Please help me to describe detachment and how to begin to work on it, because I'm having trouble doing it because I feel like a snob.
Well, there's certainly no reason why to feel like a snob.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a husband to a wife or a parent to a child, we love our spouses, we love our children. But we have to be able to have some objectivity. Otherwise, we get pulled in. We get pulled into the person's behavior. So that we have to be able to become objective, and that's what's meant by detachment. And we love the person, but we have to avoid the kind of behavior that is codependent and that can actually be a barrier to the person's recovery. Now, how to do this? You'll find in the codependent books and at the meetings. And there's a daily a book with daily affirmations for detachment. It's not simple. It may be even painful, but it can slowly be accomplished where you'll be able to say, I love him, but I'm not going to be part of him in the sense that the addict plays the fiddle and the wife plays the dancers to the tune. So you have to be able to detach from his behavior, even though you continue to love him.
Can I add something about that book, which I highly recommend for everybody to get it, is look at the chapter of acceptance and gratitude. It's very helpful when you work on your detachment. Okay, another one. Just a second. Would you recommend that a couple hold off having relations in trying to start a family until the husband has fully recovered or shown tremendous progress?
Let me do that in two parts.
Okay.
I think that as long as there is a question whether the marriage is going to survive, there's no point in bringing children into that marriage. So my feeling is that they should not have any children until it feels they're quite certain that the marriage is going to survive. Because there's nothing worse than it for a child than parental separation. So now, whether there should be abstinence as part of the recovery, that is a decision that the sex therapist has to help the person make. Sometimes they do a contract for abstinence. But it's an individual decision. I can't answer that for everybody. But the therapist should be able to help you decide if and when and how long it should be abstinence.
Very good. Shira, I hope you got the answer. Okay, not hearing back from you. Just a second. I'll get another one. How should I react if I catch my husband with the schmutz?
Well, how do you want to react? You may want
to
break down.
I hope Perla got her answer.
You may want to break down. You may want to break down and cry. You may want to scream. You may want to, whatever it is that you feel like doing. You know, trust your gut and go ahead and act that way. But I want to say one thing. It also depends on how he reacts to his slip. I want to point out something about a slip. A slip is always unpleasant, but it does not have to be a catastrophe. The example that I use was that one winter we had a cold spell of sub-zero weather, and I could not get my car started, and I had to send off a registered letter at the post office, so it was only about 6 blocks, so I walked. Now, the streets were partially icy, but I was careful, and about 3 blocks on the way, after three
mm-hmm.
blocks, unfortunately, I slipped and fell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, thank God I did not break any bones, but it hurt.
Mm-hmm.
However, if somebody had told me, oh, you slipped, you must be back home. I said, no, I'm not back home. I made 3 blocks progress, and that cannot be taken away from me.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that any kind of progress that we make in recovery, that progress stays with us, even though there is a slip. Now, if there is a slip, then with the helping people, the therapist and the sponsor, the person should try to examine what happened that there was a slip. Where did I go wrong? Again, go over the kinds of elements that are necessary in recovery. Did I slip up on my meetings? Did I slip up on my contact with my sponsor? Did I slip up on my daily prayer? Did I slip on working the steps? Right? Am I still losing my anger? Am I still being selfish and inconsiderate? Those are the kinds of changes that are necessary for recovery. And when a slip occurs, it's a sign that an indication that the recovery program has somehow or other not been worked adequately, and to go back and reinforce. It may be necessary that to increase meeting attendance from twice a week to 3 or 4 or 5 times a week. Now, if people cannot find enough SA meetings in the area, I say go to AA meetings. There's a lot of them around because
mm-hmm.
the 12 steps are the 12 steps regardless. And even though they'll be talking about alcohol, the sex addict can hear when they talk about alcohol, the sex addict should hear lust. So increasing the attendance at meetings is extremely important, and increasing contact with the sponsor.
Yes. I am on the call, and I have a question. I'm stuck in a situation where, as far as I know, I'm the center of my husband's addiction. It's about me, and I'm very much entangled in the situation, which is draining me and destroying me as a person. It's a confusing situation. Do you have any advice?
Well, I'm not sure what the woman means that she is the center of the addiction.
Okay. Can I make an assumption?
Go ahead.
Whoever sent the email, it sounds to me like she is there for him for every need that he has. And whenever he's anxious and need the release, she's there for him. She's there for him with the stress that he has. And he, like the program says, she's being objectified.
Right. Look, husbands and wives should, of course, enjoy their intimacy. But if the husband makes kinds of demands on the wife, which she feels she cannot comply with, right, she should not give up her own dignity, right, and she should draw the line. She'd be very willing to participate in sexual relations. I mean, there are some husbands who want sex 3 times a day, right, and the woman feels she simply cannot do that. Right, so she has certainly the right and the obligation to care for herself and not go along with his unrealistic demands.
Okay. Anybody else? I believe I exhausted all the questions. Oh, wait a minute. Here's another one.
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay, go ahead. I'll take it from the call. Go ahead. You introduce yourself if you like.
Hi, my name is Johannes.
Okay, Yehudis, welcome.
Thank you. The question is, how do I balance my feelings that I feel that my trust was broken, that I was lied to, all my hurt feelings that I'm going through while still trying to be his support in dealing with his stresses through the program. I'm trying to be positive every time he needs to speak and every time he needs to de-stress.
Right. Well, if you believe that he is capable of recovery and that he's sincerely trying to recover, then I think you can be supportive, even though you still have some wounds from the past. And here you project a little bit into the future and with the hope and anticipation that there is going to be a healthy relationship again. So you can't simply turn off the feelings that you have, the feeling of having been cheated, the feeling of having been betrayed. But again, as I said before, if the person shows sincere desire at becoming a new person, then I think it becomes easier to put them aside. And it depends what you see in his recovery. If you don't see any significant change in his personality, then it's going to be next to impossible to be supportive of him, because then he's not in true recovery. But if he shows that, in addition to stopping acting out, that he is becoming a more considerate person, that he's not blaming you or anyone else for his own faults, that he's willing to accept responsibility, and getting rid of his character defects, if you pick that up, then I think that eventually the anger and the betrayal, the feelings of betrayal, will fade and become eventually get rid of them.
Okay, anybody else on the call?
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Hannah.
Hannah, welcome. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. My husband's been in recovery for 3 years, and in the beginning, he was able to get like 9 months of recovery at a time, where now he does go to meetings three times a week, and does see a sex therapist, and we do also go to marriage counseling. Why now he can't keep as much recovery as long.
Miriam, do you want to repeat the question for me?
Okay. Hannah just shared with us that her husband has been recovery for years. I didn't catch how many years?
3 years.
3 years. He's been clean at 9 months at a time. They go to therapist. He goes to meeting 3 times a week. And she's wondering how come the recovery and the sobriety does not last longer than 9 months.
Again, I'm repeating myself. It may well be that the desirable character transformation has not occurred yet. And that can be a very slow process. And as long as that's not really solidified, there can be relapses, whether it's every 6 months or 9 months or once every year. So he still has to be working on himself with a program. And sometimes if he gets the right person who can help him with some spirituality in Jewishness, that can be a tremendous support in addition to the program. It will not take the place of the program. And I disagree with people who say, just go for religious teaching and forget the program. The program is the basis of recovery, but I think that adding to it the contributions of spirituality that we find in the Torah literature, especially in the ethics and Musar, I think that can help speed the process so that there will be fewer and hopefully no relapses.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rabbi Korsky, now this is a question about intimacy, and this is a question that a lot of the women I'm dealing with have the same problem. This is, how can I really tell that my husband is thinking about me at the act and he's not thinking about those women that he once saw?
Well, Well, you have to be willing to give the person credit for his recovery. If he is really recovering, then he's not going to be thinking about those women. And secondly, begin to give yourself more credit for yourself, because behind the thought that he may be thinking of other women is still the idea, maybe I'm not attractive enough, maybe I'm not satisfying him. Begin to think more of better of yourself. You may not be able to get rid of those thoughts, but he still may be fantasizing other women. It's true that it's brought down in halacha, that in Jewish law, that a person is not permitted to fantasize about another woman when he's having relations with his wife. So if it's brought down in halacha, it's because it's not an uncommon phenomenon, even without being sex addicts. So it can happen, it's improper, but I think that the woman should feel stronger and better about herself, and hopefully as the person recovers, he'll hopefully get rid of those fantasies. Can you ever be absolutely certain of that? No.
Yes, and again, ladies, I've been getting a lot of emails of questions that kind of repeat themselves because they come from a place of anger and sadness, of the betrayal, and I totally understand that. But I will reiterate what Rabbi Twersky said. It's the process. And the process is the healing. To come and put a clock of how long it's going to take for your husband to change, it's impossible. Because we need to respect the process, not the destination. And when you have the anxiety about when is he going to, why is he sleeping, why he is not sticking with it, what about the fantasies, what about the betrayal, what about the Torah beauty of intimacy? That is your hurt, that is your pain, but it's going to go away when each and every one of the spouse and the co-spouse working the program and changing their character defense. And this is and I hope that Rabbi Twersky, I summed out what
yes,
you said,
perfectly.
That it sounds very clear. Is right. There something that you want to add, please?
No, I think you did it very well. Listen, my dear, I'm more than happy to have been able to share this, but I do have to leave the call now.
Okay.
And
Rabbi Twersky,
great success, and don't forget, just as the addict has to pray, I think that we all have to pray, and just like we pray for other people who are sick, we should pray for our husbands also.
Hey, Rabbi Twersky, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, and Musar, I think that can help speed the process so that there will be fewer and hopefully no relapses.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rabbi Twersky, now this is a question about intimacy, and this is a question that a lot of the women I'm dealing with have the same problem. This is, I can really tell that my husband is thinking about me at the act, and he's not thinking about those women that he once saw?
Well, you have to be willing to give the person credit for his recovery. If he is really recovering, then he's not going to be thinking about those women. And secondly, begin to give yourself more credit for yourself, because behind the thought that he may be thinking of other women is still the idea, maybe I'm not attractive enough, maybe I'm not satisfying him. Begin to think more of better of yourself. You may not be able to get rid of those thoughts, but he still may be fantasizing other women. But
ladies, you need to *6 your phone while you're listening to Rabbi Twersky. It's very disruptive when you're doing your things and you're listening at the same time. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Rabbi Dvorsky. I had to interrupt.
Right.
Go ahead.
I don't know that you can ever be totally certain that he is not fantasizing. It's true that it's brought down in halacha, that in Jewish law, that a person is not permitted to fantasize about another woman when he's having relations with his wife. So if it's brought down in halacha, it's because it's not an uncommon phenomenon, even without being sex addicts. Right? So it can happen. It's improper. But I think that the woman should feel stronger and better about herself. And hopefully as the person recovers, he'll hopefully get rid of those fantasies. Can you ever be absolutely certain of that? No.
Yes, and again, ladies, I've been getting a lot of emails of questions that kind of repeat themselves because they come from a place of anger and sadness of the betrayal, and I totally understand that. But I will reiterate what Rabbi Dvorsky said. It's a process. And the process is the healing. To come and put a clock of how long it's going to take for your husband to change, it's impossible. Because we need to respect the process, not the destination. And when you have the anxiety about when is he going to, why is he sleeping, why he is not sticking with it, what about the fantasies, what about the betrayal, what about the Torah beauty of intimacy? That is your hurt. That is your pain. But it's going to go away when each and every one of the spouse and the co-spouse working the program and changing their character defect. And this is and I hope that Rabbi Dvorsky, I summed out what you said.
Perfectly.
That it sounds very clear. Is there something that you want to add, please?
No, I think you did it very well. Listen, my dear, I'm more than happy to have been able to share this, but I do have to leave the call now.
Okay.
And
I wish you all success.
And don't forget, just as the addict has to pray, I think that we all have to pray, and that just like we pray for other people who are sick, we should pray for our husbands also.
Hey, Rabbi Dvorsky, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.